Hello and welcome back to the F24 podcast. My name is David and each week, well, nearly each week, I have a creative come over to my studio in Northampton to talk about their lives and interactions with London, culture and creativity. I hope you're all well. I've been killer busy. It's been quite a nuts year so far and logistical business tasks are pulling me every day at the minute. Loads of projects on, so bear with me if I miss a week. Don't know if you've checked the website yet. If not, please do, f24podcast.com. And obviously we're on Twitter and Instagram at f24podcast for you to check the clips and all that. So this week, we got Candy Bandita from GOT. She came over and we had a great and funny chat. Candy's been involved in the culture since the 90s, and after coming across the South Bank on a school trip, it really took her in. What she saw there and the energy she felt really enamoured her, and she decided to follow it up by getting back there as soon as possible. She tells us about the first people she met in graffiti and skating cultures and what she got from it in those early years, and also about her passion for music and where that comes from. We also get into what she does to support her art pursuits, and a bit of chat about the crew, GOT. Gyros on Tuesday. It was great, honest and inspiring. Really funny as well. I loved it. Go and check Candy at Candy_Bandita on Instagram whilst you're listening. Enjoy. This is F24. Wicked. Thanks for coming around.
Anytime.
Wicked. It's nice to meet you properly at last. So yeah, we must have crossed paths in the...
Well, we have. I did that job for you. Right?
Oh, that's right.
Like sugar paint.
Yeah, yeah, with, that was nuts.
It was like a workshop with sort of
at some university, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. You know what? Quite weirdly, the carpenter who made that wall ended up keeping it.
No way.
Yeah, he went up there and picked it
because
he loved it.
Okay.
And he went and picked it up after the job was done because they didn't want it. They couldn't house it anywhere. And I think he's got it up in his studio now.
Oh, yes, that's lovely.
His woodwork studio, yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's kept it.
Yeah,
that's right,
it.
I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah,
I forgot we
had
that crossover.
And it was the first time I'd kind of used sugar paint as well. And that was really, it was actually amazing because I drove there and I drove back.
Yeah.
And usually if I go painting and I drive back, I'm always a little bit like, woo.
A bit
like,
spun out, yeah, of course, yeah.
But like the sugar paint, I didn't at all, so, you know.
It's not bad, is it?
No. I don't work for sugar or anything.
No, no, no.
I didn't promote it.
Yeah, well, that's, we had to use it. You had to use it, didn't you?
Because yeah, because it's indoors.
Exactly, yeah.
And it really did its thing.
Yeah, no, that was, that's right. I forgot about that job.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was wicked. Yeah, wicked.
Oh, yeah, it was good. Thanks for that.
We have
crossed
paths.
Cheers.
No worries. So let's start at the beginning. Where are you from?
I am from Brentford.
Brentford?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm West London gal.
Yeah.
So I lived...
How was that over there?
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, there's nothing to do and there's no transport link. So as I was growing up, it was a bit fraught for things to do.
Yeah. I suppose you didn't realise for a while and then you realised.
Yeah.
Where the fuck are the trains?
Well, there's one mainline train that goes into Waterloo.
Yeah.
And, I got into skateboarding like quite young because I could get from Brent, I could bunk the train from Brentford to Waterloo, go and skate the South Bank. So I was doing that from about 13.
Were there other people from your area doing that as well?
No, so I didn't know anyone in my area. Okay. So that's the thing. I was always just sort of on my own. oh, she's adorable.
Brie. Yes, Brie.
She's going to be interviewing now. Yeah. I grew up in Brentford, but I went to school in Chiswick.
Oh, right, okay.
Like, Chiswick Community School.
Yeah.
And so all my friends were from, like, around Chiswick.
Yeah.
So I used to go bunk the train and go and skate at South Bank.
Wicked.
And that's kind of, just through skateboarding, like, was where all my influences came from. Like,
how did you get into skateboarding? What was it?
I don't really know. Actually, I do know. We went on a school trip to the MoMI, which is now the BFI building.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
The Museum of Moving Image. Anyway, we went there and like we walked under the South Bank and I was just like, oh my God, like what are they doing? And then I sort of bunked off and just stayed at the South Bank, was watching these like
wicked
kids skate. And I was just like, yeah, I really want to do that. Really want to do that. So bought like a board from Argos. And then eventually like my parents were like, oh, I'll buy you a proper thing after like, asking them for ages. So I used to skate, and that's kind of where I got into graffiti and music, and that's where all of that came from. Basically, I think without skateboarding, I don't really know. I often wonder who I'd be without it.
All right, yeah.
And I still skate now. I skate sort of every week. I was trying to get back into it, but I came off my board and totally obliterated my knee.
Oh shit.
And had I've had 7 operations across both knees over the course of about 10 years.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Yeah, it's pretty mental.
Because of skating and that.
Because of skating. Yeah, I did my ACL and then they bodged the operation.
Oh, shit.
Which one of the doctors actually said that, but anyway.
Yeah.
And then yeah, and then I had like a cadaver, which was like a dead person's bit in my knee. Tried that, and then they're like, that hasn't worked. And they took a bit out of this one, put it in that one, and like, yeah. And so for years, I was, I had this like sort of one of them braces, you see, like around your leg for ages, and just physio for like
fucking
years.
Hell. And you want to skate again?
Oh, I still skate. I skate now. Yeah, I mean, the doctors told me I would never skate again. And like NHS physio, they don't really cater for people who used to be into sport as well. Like, because I did taekwondo as well.
Right.
And I was competed at a really high level. Like, I actually did this sounds really like pretentious, but I did the world championships and
wow.
got silver.
Fucking hell.
Which was pretty mental.
Was that
but
when
then,
you were young?
I was about 25.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've done it for years.
Yeah.
And
that's when I did my knees, and then the rest is history. But I'm kind of relieved, because once you get to that level, I don't know, there's a lot of commitment involved
then
after that.
Then it's a
that,
life takeover. So up to that point, fun. It was loads of hobby. It was just, I like doing this. And
yeah.
It was wicked, and competing was brilliant.
But. Yeah, exactly. And I've done that, tick.
Yeah.
Done. Like.
Yeah, silver in the world, yeah. Man. It's killing it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So yeah, so while I was like not able to, well, I was on like incapacity benefit and just at home, I kind of got into programming.
Uh-huh.
So that's eventually what I do now. Well, not programming, but I do like user interface design and product design and stuff. So
crazy.
Had it not been for that wouldn't have happened. And you know what I mean? It's
yeah,
one
exactly.
of those kind of
all
things, the way it all
on.
Kind of works out.
So
really.
What years were you going to South Bank? Was this in...
So South Bank, I was probably like 15 to about... I mean, I still skate there now, really.
Yeah. What was this, the 90s?
Yeah.
2000s, yeah.
Yeah,
wicked.
Yeah. Yeah,
amazing time.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was... It was just such an interesting place down there, just such a melting pot of so many different people and like, you know, like skateboarding kind of, it had no, there was just so many, yeah, different people, creed, colour, religion, like classes.
There was nothing to tick,
you know,
to get into it.
No.
Yeah, didn't have to tick any boxes.
And you just took everyone at face value. And there were people there that I used to skate with who were like, you know, really like, proper rich and people who were proper poor, but you never sort of
no one cared.
No, it wasn't like it didn't really.
It's a great thing about
come
culture,
up.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until I'm a little bit older and I kind of realise that there is actually a bit of that's not normal, or you know, that society isn't as inclusive as what skateboarding was.
You see the same in the graph world. You see exactly the
definitely.
Same.
Yeah.
Massive width and width.
Yeah.
Breadth and width of, you know, various parts of people's society.
Absolutely,
society,
yeah.
You can't stereotype it. People try to stereotype it, but you can't.
No, it's true. Yeah. But, I mean, I got into graph through that. I had some amazing buddies down South
Did you paint
Bank.
There as well then, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, we always used to paint down there.
Wicked.
It was just kind of skateboarding and graph went hand in hand for me.
Yeah. How was school?
School, I didn't really get on at school.
No.
Couldn't really be bothered.
Didn't really want to do it.
I didn't really get on in my year.
Yeah.
I did quite well. And then like as soon as I finished my GCSEs, I went, went to Richmond College. So I did my A-levels there instead of like at school.
Staying on, yeah.
And I don't really know many people from my school now. I've got like one or two that I still see.
How was Richmond?
Richmond was amazing.
Yeah.
That's where I met Joe Shee. And who writes as well. Obviously.
Yeah.
So we've been, she's like my sister from another mister. Like we've been friends for like
wicked.
Ever. And we both kind of got into graph like separately, and then sort of we're like, oh, we're both doing this, like it's kind of interesting. But yeah, God, we were absolute tear up. There was 4 of us. It was me, Joe, Alexa, and Claire, and we just tear it up at Richmond, like just on the sesh. No, not Chock, but I did know Chock loosely at that time. And it wasn't until later that I got to know her and then put in the crew and stuff. So,
but the 4 of you there, she painting as well.
We weren't painting then.
No.
And it's funny because we've talked about this before. We were like, well, we were just like, if if we'd been painting at that age, like properly, we would either be in jail or be dead.
Right.
Yeah. Like, because we were proper tearaways. And to have something like that, I don't know. Yeah. Like, there's part of us that is just like, oh, man.
Part of you wishes you did.
Yeah, I mean, we would have killed it. Yeah. We would have absolutely killed it. We would have just egged each other on, and we would have absolutely killed it. But we didn't, and I feel like there's a reason.
Yeah. What were you doing? What was it you were doing in college? Was it art or...?
I did, I can't remember, art, photography, English lit, and then I did a City and Guilds in radio and journalism, which has come in handy. City and Guilds.
What was taking up your time with She then, if you weren't painting? It was just hanging
just
out
on
and
the
just
sesh.
Being mad.
Yeah, just on the sesh all the time.
Wicked. Yeah. There's loads of laughs.
Yeah.
Fucker.
And then I went to uni.
Oh, right.
So I wanted to go away for uni and I ended up getting a place at Chelsea College, did a foundation there, and then got a place at LCC and then did my degree there. And again, that was right next to the South Bank. So I kind of, that was my second wave of getting back into
skateboarding.
Did you
move out of home
well.
For that then? Yeah. Or did
you No. My parents couldn't afford to send me away. I'm the only person in my family who's gone to university. So we'll...
amazing thing to have done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wicked.
So, that's my education history.
When you left education, your skating still part of your life? And
yeah, skating was. Pieces? Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah. And what did you do after that?
Get
into work life?
I did, yeah. Yeah. I went straight into work. So I did interactive design at uni, which was quite pioneering at the time. I graduated in 2005. Uh-huh. And that wasn't, there was six people in my class and it was amazing.
Wow.
Literally did some really awesome stuff. Nothing code based, but it was all design, but physical interaction. And so my final projects were brilliant. I did one of them, they're all graffiti based. Sorry. One, I bought this spray paint, which has got beads in it. So when you flash a light on it, it reflects, the signs or the road markings and stuff like that. But I got it in a can.
Wow.
And I went under the stanchions, Brentford, the Great West Road, there's all these stanchions underneath. So I was just doing these little flowers all the way along. So when you drove across, when you drove past it, it would just flash up these flowers, pop, pop, pop. So that was one that I did. Another one was an interactive graffiti wall, which was this photoluminescent material. If you use a particular frequency of light, a UV light, you can draw on it and you can see it, and then it sort of gradually fades away.
Fucking hell.
Which is really fun. And then I did that at the South Bank Centre and Future Sonic Interactive Festival in Manchester. Blimey. And I used to do it at Throwdown, which was a breakdancing night that my mate used to run that we used to go to all the time. And it was just so much fun.
Yeah. Loads of experimenting. And
yeah, you'd never get the opportunity in your real life to do
six
stuff like that.
Six people in a class.
Man. I know. Well, he lied. The tutor, he was brilliant, but he lied on the thing to say there was 10 because he couldn't do it with six. But you just don't get. So anyway, so I came out of uni and it was you put your CV together and stuff. And I'm I'm an interactive designer. And at the time I just kept getting jobs for can you build Oracle database warehouses? And I'm I have no idea what even that is. I've got some weird robots that you might be interested in. It's one of those things where it's you do a degree, but actually it doesn't really mean shit until you just need to have experience.
It's such a kick in the teeth, man, to have so much fun. Was it 3 years?
Yeah, 3 years, and then including the foundation was 4. It wasn't really. It was just a laugh, really.
Yeah, sounds great. But just saying the next step, you can't just go and do it.
You can't just go and walk in and carry on doing that. Yeah, it's true. But I think I did quite well at uni as well, because I think I didn't have the distraction. All of my friends went away and, kind of moved out and all of that stuff, which I at the time was really that's all I want to do. But actually it just made, I actually focused on my work. Whereas
you kept
them,
you steady,
just,
yeah. You'd already experienced the city. Do you know what I mean? You knew it inside out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah.
And it might have been annoying. You might have wanted to go to Brighton or whatever, but it is what it is. And you're right. You've got to keep your head down, basically.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it did me the world of good. But I came out of uni, and so I ended up working. My first job was working in a data center, where I was plugging Cat5 cables into from one server to another, and in like server warehouses, they have like a floor like this, about a foot high, with fan, loads and loads of fans. It's really noisy, and you've got to like it's called floor diving. So you have to pull up like the trapdoor, and then you go under, and you have to army crawl with a Cat5 cable to go and plug it into the other server. And you'd have to draw out like server maps and stuff. Like,
to show
mental.
Where the cables are.
Yeah, yeah, it's like the kind of thing that you'd be like, I've never thought about how this happens.
Yeah, definitely.
So that was kind of an interesting experience as well. And at least it was slightly tech related
as
well.
That's a real behind the scenes thing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's nuts and bolts. Quite literally.
Yeah,
yeah, quite literally. Yeah, it was something you would never think of. You're right. You'd think the setup happened, and then that's it.
And as websites grow, they need more server space, and so you've got to rig them up and stuff. Yeah.
So was this working for companies that had these big ass?
This was working. Yeah, it was working for one company.
Right. Yeah.
And. And I kind of just started getting into web design, and then I always knew I wanted to do something in tech. I always knew I wanted to work in tech because it just wasn't going to go away.
Yeah.
You know, like in our lifetimes, like technology is probably the most important thing. You know,
must be.
Like we're probably at the start of like a an industrial revolution.
Oh yeah, this is it. We're only 20, 30 years in.
Yeah,
like 20 years in of this smartness.
Yeah.
20 years is nothing.
It's mental.
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so I find it really exciting, and nice. I just want to have, you know, my hand in that pie.
Yeah.
So got into web design, did my knees in, learned to code, started freelancing, making like websites for small businesses, and then started getting contracts for like really big websites. So I did like Royal Mail, Eurostar,
wow.
like massive, massive, crazy big websites.
You worked with teams on that?
Yeah. So I was one of it. Yeah, as a front end developer.
Wicked.
But then I realised that front end development is not for me. It's quite, you have to work with people. Well, it's just quite behind your computer, and you don't really interact with people very much.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that you work with are very logically minded rather than creative minded.
Yeah.
And that was something that was a bit, I find it a bit difficult.
I suppose it's like it's just pure feedback, I suppose, you're dealing with, isn't it? And then a load of logical thought.
Well, do you know what's funny about front-end development? Because it's such a thankless job.
Yeah.
You like spend days doing something, and then you show someone, expect them to be like, oh, wow, this works. They don't. All they see is the things that don't work. They're like, oh, that button doesn't work. You're like, oh yeah, but this works. The whole search functionality works. You know what I mean? It's proper thankless.
You could look
at that. I just kind of got to the point where I was like, oh, this is shit.
And what about the creative side of it? Was
So I was always designing,
yeah.
And I was always doing like, I called myself a front end designer, so mm-hmm. I could design and code, which was kind of niche.
Mm.
Now that's got a name, and that's called like UX designer, which is what I do.
Yeah.
Or product designer, because I code, I do user interface, and I do user research. So that's kind of under the umbrella of all that. So I've just kind of moved, like surfed the tech wave for the last few years in terms of career. But,
so how have you managed then? Like, I wouldn't have known you had such a, not that, I don't know, you've painted so much. That seems like you do a lot, your work is a lot. Do you know what I mean? Your daily stuff is a lot. I've painted, I don't know, I've probably done like 4 or 5 pieces this year, like if that.
It was same here,
but
I think.
You've painted a lot. So what happened? When did that start to speed up?
So I basically started contracting, which means that you get like a contract with a company, a really large company, and then they all have you for, 3 months to 6 months, maybe 2 years, whatever. And then, and pay you a really high day rate, and that is your life. Like you're completely, that's all you do.
My girlfriend worked like that.
Really,
yeah. She's worked like that before.
And then So then I would just take a contract, you know, get my head down for 6 months or so. And then as soon as I finish, I just have like 3 months off.
Wicked.
I'd go traveling, go painting.
Yeah.
And I just felt that it kind of gave me that work-life balance that, I think is the dream, really.
That sounds brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I took a year off to try and be an artist a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I did that once.
Yeah, saved up loads of money. And then I just found out that, like, well, you can do it. I could do it.
Yeah.
And I could pay my rent and I could just about eat, but I can't afford, like, Ubers and cocktails. Do you know what I mean? And I go, I've got used to this lifestyle now. So, and like chasing small businesses and people for money and people that, you know, you doing the work and they're not paying you. And, you know, things like painting a wall and then finding out that they've paid a company, you know, thousands of pounds to paint in white before you and they're paying you 300 quid. You know, it's like, this is unbelievable,
it's
man.
Fucking,
like, screw this. Like, I'm not down with that. So,
yeah. Were you doing canvases as well? And were you experimenting with other stuff? Was it mainly walls you were painting?
Yeah, just walls. Oh, and signage as well. So, like, sort of hand painted, signage.
But you'd work had been so good and you'd got into such an interesting role and with all the perks of the money, it was just like,
I could
mix the two again.
I couldn't give up my lifestyle.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, cool, jump into art full time, but I could keep mixing the two and it'd be absolutely fine.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of where I've got. But it is difficult to kind of to be satisfied.
Was that like the pieces you started painting? Were you working at the same time, like before you did the year off? Obviously.
Yeah.
You were painting already and you were taking those times out and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess my graph career went like, I just used to tag and stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and we used to do like inside. I think I painted one trackside with acne when I was quite young, like up by Waterloo. But yeah, we just do the insides or the outsides as you're waiting for the train, kind of thing. Because it was in the 90s. It was that kind of like...
90s and 2000s. It was back jumps. It was the insides.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
I just stayed with you then, really.
It was just always there.
Yeah.
And like the guys at South Bank called me Candy because I've got curly hair and I dyed it. I used to dye it pink because it was the 90s. It's all coming back now, like the dyed hair, but I was there.
Yeah.
But they used to call me the Candy Girl because it looked like I had candy floss hair.
Wicked.
So I kept it which was fun until you get to your 30s and you know, it's a bit awkward, isn't it? Like, why are you cooking? But you've got to keep it, haven't you? It's your name.
You can't change
That's
it.
Your brand.
No, exactly. It's a weird thing getting older. And you're like, I have a tag, I'm nearly 40, and I do have a tag, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's brilliant.
So, it was always just there, and then it wasn't until, so I moved to Shepherd's Bush, I got my, I'm on the housing association, so I got my flat in Shepherd's Bush, and that's when I started, because I never knew anyone that painted, and the only painting that I really did was, so in Brentford, like I said, there was nothing there, and it's getting better, but there was, it's like industrial estates and derelict factories and stuff like that, and because I never had any money, I would just go and kind of urban explore and like just go and sort of run around and paint the walls and, you know, like just on my own. I was always on my own doing it. I was an idiot. I remember once, like, climbing onto the roof of this, like, I don't know what it was. It must have been, like, some ship thing, because it's right by the docks, like a ship warehouse or something. So it's, like, three stories high, but no floors in one bit of it. So anyway, I got onto the roof, and I was walking along and then, like, put my foot through the roof, and there's, like, a three-story drop. And I remember thinking to myself, like... Fuck, man. I was like, if I fell, I would have had, the best thing to happen would, I would die instantly.
Yeah.
The second thing would be that I'd just be crippled and no one would find me. And I just thought, God, what a fucking mentalist. Like,
do you know that happened to Trev, I think? You know Trev?
Yeah.
That happened to him at Wandsworth. He broke his leg in Wandsworth and he's by himself.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know how he got out, but
fucking
King
hell.
Trev. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's some dangerous shit we do out
it
there.
It is, yeah. I remember those. I remember that.
Wandsworth
Squats. The Wandsworth Squats,
yeah. That was wicked, that place.
Yeah, really good fun, yeah.
So,
painting and painting pieces and not knowing many people, and you moved to Shepherd's Bush.
And... moved to Shepherd's Bush, and then I got to know Jose.
Oh, right.
So cool. Jose Theme and Hope Ski and Amber. I've known Amber since like sort of college days, and sort of like loosely like friends. I used to know him really well. So it was when I moved to Shepherd's Bush in about 2012 that I suddenly had people to paint with.
Amazing.
And
a good team as well.
Man. Yeah, they were amazing. I mean, I owe them, all of them, like so much for just, you know, it's quite intimidating being a girl, really. Yeah. Like, and you're not just going to rock up to a Hall of Fame and go and paint unless you're with people. Yeah. Like, you know, so that, you know, kind of gave me the confidence to actually go and do it. So they were just, yeah. Top squad, wicked. Basically.
Jose's
yeah.
sick, man. I love his stuff.
Yeah. He's banging. We were like...
I love all of their stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, proper close friends at that time. It was really good. Mm. And then, like... And then got put in Goth.
How did you get that?
So, Chock... you know what? Because Chock, she was doing those girl jams.
Yeah.
She was doing, like, the Goth jams. And me and she went down a couple of times, and then she was just like, yeah, do you want to be in the crew, which is really safe. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, but initially I was like, I don't really want to be in a girl crew. Like, I don't want to be seen as like a girl writer. I want to be seen as a writer, like, you know, despite the fact that I've got a really fucking girly name, so but everyone knows about it, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I kind of had my doubts, but anyway, I was just like, well, you know, girl gang, yes. And just met everyone else, like Resnick, Neonita, Pixie, obviously she. And then there's more like outside of London, but the core London crew, like, well, in fact, all of us were like sisters. Like, it's mad now. Like, we've known each other for probably like 8 years or something, and we're literally like family.
Amazing.
And it's like, it's the best thing. Like, yeah.
Definitely
great.
A good decision.
Yeah.
And you caused a storm. That crew... done amazing things. I could see what you mean by not wanting to be labelled as such. And you're like, I could get why you'd question it.
Mm.
But thank God that crew happened, because the inspiration has come off the back of it. I can't imagine how wide that must have been now.
It's paved the way for...
really has.
It's opened the scene to other girl writers.
And not to diminish anything that any other girl writer had done before you, but... the force in which GOT worked, and you know, those productions and the constant paintings, and then Chock with the work that she was putting in.
Chock just absolutely killed it.
Yeah, I mean, she smashed it.
She's like the biggest hero and legend in my eyes. Like, you know, she was killing it, like, you know, despite her gender.
Yeah.
You know, like, she was
a writer. You all are writers. Yeah. And so, it was. But yeah, you're right. It was a bit weird thing to like, right, let's make a thing of this.
Yeah.
But it worked.
Yeah. I think when it started, it was important.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think by the time we kind of got put in. But it's funny because we're now talking, because we're all like old ladies now. We call ourselves grannies on top. And we've been trying to kind of like rebrand slightly to just be Got Crew, and then coming up with like acronyms for it, like Gyros on Tuesday is one of my favourite ones. Do you know what? I can't think of any right now, but like, Gyros on Tuesdays, up with them all the time. Yeah.
Dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've known Chock since Brighton, man. I knew Chock in the early 2000s. Before I opened my shop, I think I met her. I met her through other writers and selling weed and all that type of shit. But yeah, and she was a force then.
Yeah.
Right? She was on it then.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't remember the crew now. I remember her hitting up a crew in Brighton hard as well. Yeah. And then watching her go back to London and move on was, amazing.
Yeah.
And all those photos you've seen are just sick.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
She was just absolutely killing it. Yeah. Absolutely killing it. And still does as well.
Yeah, she's a monster.
She's in New Zealand now. I went to go and see her in January.
Oh, wicked.
And we went and painted a couple of... But like, we did like sort of legal...
Yes, you know, painting. Walls and stuff. Hobby days.
And that was really nice.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
She's all happy over there. She's got a house. Good. And everything. It's like lovely,
Wicked, man.
But I miss her. Yeah, we all miss her. I bet. Really, really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's good to hear she's out there. I don't know where she was.
Mm.
That's nice.
Mm.
And so, being we've got, how were those first few years? What was that like then?
Well, I mean, Joe and I have always been painting together.
Yeah.
Well, she and I have always been painting together. And it was just more people to paint with. And we're all so different.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone in the crew has completely different styles. That yeah. Actually, some of our productions, and like, we all laugh, like, our productions are dreadful.
Yeah, you think?
So funny. We've yet to kind of like work out how to get all of our really completely separate styles united on a wall.
I see.
Like, really
okay.
Funny, yeah. But we just have so much fun painting together.
Yeah.
And like, and more than that as well. Like, it's, you know, they're, like I say, they're my best friends. Like, at the moment I've got Faye, who's Bubs, who is up in Newcastle, but she's come down, she's a tattoo artist,
uh-huh.
And so she's come down and she's doing like a residency in you know, in London somewhere. So
wicked.
She's staying with me at the moment, and
lovely.
Like, you know, like, we're all just sort of there for each other all the time. Like, I speak to them like probably every day. We've got a WhatsApp group, so we're
built
connected.
A nice network with
yeah
it,
really good network. Yeah it's really good.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And what were your most active years with those lot, do you think? What were the most, like,
I think it's only, I mean, this is quite late on really, because I think I've been in GOT for about, I don't even know, probably about 6 years or something.
Yeah, but you were at the jams and all that type of stuff with them, and you
we went to the jams, and then then it all kind of went a bit weird. There was some woman who came along who just didn't know anything about the scene, and as that is a product of what got kind of paved the way. Like I was saying, they sort of paved the way for like for it to be an inclusive space for women and girls to get involved in the graph scene, but. As a byproduct of that, you've also got people kind of leeching it as well. And we had this one particular leech, and I'm not going to... There's quite a few, actually, but there's one in particular, and she's basically took the GOT jams and just made it into something absolutely appalling. And,
oh, shit.
Yeah, it was pretty... Yeah, it was pretty bad. But, yeah.
Yeah, it happens, though, man. We walk into these... I mean, this is the thing. Is the crossover with culture and... like commodity or business, like, it can be done, but it has to be done with kid gloves.
Yeah.
And it has to come with morals and the things that the culture's built from.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
For it to be authentic.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And if it, because I've been in business for 17 years, like, I'm part of this, you know, back when I started, the word sellout was still quite a big thing. Mm. Like, it's not as much anymore, thank God.
Yeah.
But, yeah, trying to find that line and draw that line is a hard thing to do, but it's necessary, man.
Yeah.
Like, because you just end up looking silly. Like,
yeah.
It loses.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think you do end up looking silly, but to the right people, there's certain people that... So
don't
when
see
it goes
it.
Mainstream,
yeah.
People don't see that.
No.
They don't understand that this, whatever this is that someone's created, is completely...
Well,
like,
and then we become collateral damage.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's the... That's the shit we have to carry by being part of the culture. If we decide not to cross over, if we decide not to sell out as such, that's on us.
Yeah.
We have to then just accept the pain that comes with what the other people will do. And that's the sad, and I'm sure it happens in many cultures. You know,
I
know fuck all about DJ culture, but I can't imagine. Mm. Like, Bree, can you stop being a pest? Can you stop it? On your bed now. Go on.
Well, yeah, I mean, so I DJ as well.
Yeah.
Wicked. Speaking of DJing.
Yeah.
So I got into, like, drum and bass quite when I was quite young, and the whole sort of, like, raving scene.
Wicked.
You know, going to squat parties and stuff like that. And then in about 2010, I started doing, like, a radio show with my mate Oliver York, who was called Chromatic at the time. So we were Chromatic and Candy, and we used to do this, like... drum and bass radio show.
Wicked.
And then that turned into like a club night. So we had like a club night at Gingley. Remember Gingley?
Yeah.
So we used to do nights down there, which was all kind of like the newer kind of minimal stuff, like Autonomic, D Bridge, all of that kind of like new wave of
drum and bass. New sound, yeah.
And that was really
fun. When was that?
That was about 2010.
Had you been in, you've been into DJing for years, you've been into music for years.
I used to run a online radio station called Killer Waves, which the back of a torrent site. We used to run like a music torrent site as well, and then it had a radio station on that as well. It was all like on the dark web kind of.
So that was the tech side of you.
Yeah,
putting
exactly.
Stuff to use.
Which is what, and that's why I like music production and DJing, because it is technical and yeah. You know, it's kind of got that logical edge, but I'm still creative.
And then is it electronic music mostly, like drum and bass and house and all that type of stuff? Yeah. That's your music?
Yeah, so drum and bass has always been my first love. Like my heart beats at 170 BPM.
Wicked.
But I just sort of started to grow out of it. And then the dubstep thing happened yeah. And I really got into dubstep and then garage. So and now I get a lot of garage bookings as well.
Wow. Okay.
I sort of play everything, really. Okay. I don't really have one genre.
Do you see people, do you see leeches in that scene then as well, do you think?
Do you know what? I don't really immerse myself in that scene so much, and also because I think it's quite a solitary thing. Like making beats, you're in the studio and you're yeah. on your own, whereas like graph, you're out and you see people yeah. and you know, same with skateboarding, and you know, that's more of a sociable thing, whereas like music and DJing is very kind of like you're just in your studio. But my old, but I've got two brothers and they're both producers, and my older one is like absolutely killing it. He's had number one hits.
Oh, amazing.
Like, yeah. Yeah, he did you know that Rag and Bone Man tune? Yep. That's his tune. So
oh wow.
And he's done stuff on the Mary J. Blige album, Disclosure, like all of that. So he's absolutely killing it.
What the term is for. Like.
Yeah. And he's like, whenever I call him, he's in LA, you know, he's working with some artist I've never heard of, and you know, I just can't keep up with him. So I think maybe with that influence, music is my absolute passion.
Did your brothers introduce you to music?
Yeah, well, I'm from quite a musical family. Like my dad is a musician.
Oh, right. Wicked.
And he was like Desmond Dekker's like guitarist, and you know, music's always been there. We've always had a record player. My dad's always got like loads of vinyl, you know, all of that stuff. So music's always just been there.
Yeah.
So music to me is like, I mean, I make beats in my room and then I put them on SoundCloud and they get 3 listens and I'm like,
yes,
great, you know, yeah, like that's brilliant. Fine.
Yeah.
That's
3
my
more people
relationship.
Heard it. That's
yeah,
lovely.
Exactly.
Yeah, I exactly. heard it. 3 more people. Yeah. Dope. Wicked.
And then, I mean, I get bookings because, I mean, DJing is, I mean, you can rake it in DJing. And so if I do, I mean, I play out probably a couple of times a month, if that. But, you know, £200 for an hour's work.
Lovely, man.
You know, and I've had some really good ones. I was on this agency that was, you just did corporate events where you had to look good, which is a bit like whoring yourself slightly. But, you know, do you know what?
Listen.
Didn't give a shit.
No,
it's 500 quid to turn
fine.
Up in like
and if
3 hours.
Would, let them think and perceive yeah. whatever they want. Yeah. There's a £500 check yeah. at the end of this hour. I'm good.
Like, I was DJing at Selfridges. And he was like, you have to look, you know, because I dress like this, do you know what I mean? So he was just like, yeah, you have to, you know, sort of scrub up, basically. And I was just playing in this restaurant and they kept turning the music down because it was like so, because everyone's eating. And it's just weird. There's this market now for like having a DJ as like ornamental DJ to have someone to look like it's sort of like, it's a bit weird, but you know, I guess I'm a sellout in that sense.
Oh, no, you're
like,
not. You're not. It's nothing. That isn't sellout. I'll tell you, that's basically like giving someone something they want. Okay, cool. It's a shame about the placement, but that's not on you.
No.
you come to do your skill and get paid for it.
Exactly.
They placed it in the wrong... If they think that's cool, that's on you, mate. Nothing to do with you, Candy.
No,
do you know what I mean? It's all on them.
Just take the money and run.
And it's just like, I found myself in some weird place. And you just kind of think, really?
Yeah.
You sure?
Like,
all right, cool.
I'm absolutely surplus to requirements now, but as long as you're going to pay
that's
me,
that's fine.
Care.
And I'm not blogging this, and I'm not putting it on my website. This isn't happening.
But then I get some all right gigs.
Nice.
Like I was at Queen of Hoxton last month, just doing like garage and club classics and stuff like that, which is really fun. But I mean, I find DJing absolutely terrifying.
Yeah,
like so scary. I'm just an absolute bag of nerves, like in the days leading up to it. And then when I do it, I feel great, but the pre-anxiety.
What are you worried about? Is it just it not working?
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
Just anything you could think of.
People not liking it.
Right.
dropping the wrong tune on the wrong deck. Just
the million and
up.
One things you think of them all.
Or just people judging you, you know. Like that's what I like about Graf is that what I always liked about Graf is it's like you leave your name and you're anonymous and no one sees you. No one attaches this to what's on the wall. Like they see you up and that's enough. That's all they need to know.
Yeah. And they can judge that. And then they'll have all their judgments and all that type of stuff, but it's not personal.
Exactly. You can detach yourself. Yeah. Whereas when you're standing in front of a crowd and everyone's dancing or not dancing,
it feels personal.
The worst, you know, you're just like, oh God, everyone's looking at me.
If you do a shit piece in Waterloo on a Tuesday morning, doesn't matter if anyone sees it, it's fine. I'm not going to get told to my face.
It's quite... I just find that whole aspect of it really, really, really horrible that people are looking directly at you.
Yeah, and expecting, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
But you obviously enjoy it to some extent because you...
Well, I just like music and I think that DJing has sort of been a byproduct, again, you know, like a byproduct of that, but it's sort of accidental that I've ended up sort of playing out. But, you know, if I get offered, if someone's going to pay me to play some music, then obviously I'm going to do it.
You love it.
Because I love it and that's something I do, yeah.
It's nice to have this little mix that you've got going on. Like,
sort of oscillate between music and art like this.
Yeah, and then have this good fucking career in the middle of it.
Yeah. I feel like I have a good work-life balance. I strive to do that, really. Yeah.
I mean, I can imagine. You live in London. I know. Yeah. We know what that's like. It isn't easy. You know what I mean? Mm. Whether you're working a great job or not, whether you're getting to do the shit you love to do or not, living in this city is hard. So just in general.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, when you break it down a bit and get to know those, you look at those different things and you get to do them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, I just don't have enough time for everything, though. No. That's the thing. And I feel like the older I'm getting, the less time I have. Yeah. So, you know, I have to choose.
I feel that.
And I come home from work and it's like I've got, you know, all my art stuff this side, I've got all my music stuff this side, and I've got a sofa here. Yeah. And I'm like, I might just sit on the sofa and watch some crap TV.
I know that one, man. Yeah, I think back to the years that I could be in the shop all day. And then I'd get home and I'd work all evening. I'd be painting canvases on the computer. It wouldn't bother me. Mm. Literally now, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I've got to really make myself do something more in the evenings. I think that's why I like doing this, actually.
Right, because
I'm not leaving the studio. And it's for no purpose, just to have a lovely chat.
Yeah.
I'm getting to not, that sofa calling at this age is a... It's a real thing.
Especially because at the moment I'm working for an advertising agency in town and it's quite hot, fast paced. It's really good. Like I get to do small, quick projects, which is something that like when you're contracting, you don't really get to do because you're just engrossed in one particular thing. And the turnover of work's really good. So that's good.
Lovely.
Portfolio. And it's really good fun, but it's like, you know, 8 hours, usually longer than that. Of just constant concentration and coming up with ideas and stuff, and it's great. It's just that when I come home, the thing that I really love to do, which is art and music, my creative part of my brain's like, no, nothing left.
The sponge has been squeezed, doesn't it?
So ringed out.
It needs refreshing. I know what you mean.
So it's
nuts. It feels like there could be. Yeah, I've got a couple of big projects on at the minute, and I knew they were coming. Well, I was working on getting them, and then I knew they were coming, and I thought, I've blatantly got enough creativity in me to cover these fully. Now I'm really fucking nervous, because there is only so much we can carry in a day.
I think there is.
Creative-wise, do you know what I mean? Yeah. You can't... I'm not going to fuck you. Clients, don't worry if you're listening. Like, you're fine, you're in good hands. I've got the plan, and I've figured it out over the last week about how I can do it all, but without it being too much. But I did, you know, I was just like, you know, yeah, fine, and... Then you realise, hang on one sec, I can't. I will kill myself if I try to do this all like in this way. And we haven't got it.
My older brother Ben, like the producer guy. I don't really understand how he does it. He has to constantly create all of the time, working with artists, coming up with tunes like all of the time. I can't really do that. That's why I think I like having art and music and something for my day job.
Maybe it's because he gets to do it within that one world. Whereas what you are doing is you're working and being creative. And then, like me, you're working and being creative, and then you're want to be creative also.
For like, fun, for yourself.
For fun, for yourself. And that's where finding that energy is hard.
That's it.
I can, I'm lucky I can blend a bit of my creative output within my work, obviously being self-employed. But yeah, I think that, so that probably helps me a touch. But I can see what you mean by you're just smashed by the end of 8 hours, 10 hours of...
Yeah, I mean, when I was, doing the big contracts that I was doing, like some of those were really intense in that, you know, I had to wear a suit and I was working in the city and, you know, and like definitely couldn't tell anyone about like Candy Bandita. Do you know what I mean?
They would not get
like, absolutely. Those two lives had to be completely separate. So like Shamey was one person and all of my social is different to like the Candy Bandita side and never the twain shall meet kind of thing.
Yeah, you keep them separate.
I try and keep them separate and I've, you know, so sort of living like a double life was kind of interesting. I quite liked it a little bit, like a, you know,
like an espionage. Agent.
Yeah, like an agent. Yeah.
But, I wonder, like, God, you wonder what it must be like to let, imagine you let them know. The reception you would have got would have been so crazy
because
and mixed.
In that world.
Yeah, they would have not.
They would not understand it. They'd be like, what, you're a vandal? It. Like, what? They would just, they would immediately drop
why?
You.
Like, why? Never mind about what. Just why? What? Like, why? What? Like, why?
Wouldn't compute.
Yeah, it would be so baffling for them.
Yeah.
And even the DJ stuff would be probably confusing as well.
Yeah, I would tell them a little bit about DJing. For some reason, that's a little bit more approachable.
Yeah.
You know, everyone loves music, you know.
It's a bit cool on it.
Yeah, it's cool. But but graffiti or, you know, if I ever if I ever did talk about it, it would be street art.
Yeah,
you know. And I probably am a street artist now, but I've always been, you know, I'm a graffiti artist.
Yeah, you've got into this full graffiti.
Graffiti artist.
I really believe in this shit.
Yes, I do.
I paint like this now. I'd call you a graffiti artist.
Good.
But, you know, if you want to term it, it's cool. But you, there was definitely a core reason about this.
You believe
in everything it's about.
Yeah.
Yeah. A hard thing to translate to some people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot of people on the scene that, the new school who just don't have that. And I'm not trying to belittle anyone, but like there's just some people who just don't have that.
Yeah.
The roots.
Well, that comes down to just the way people get into it now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a, you don't need, you know, you had to go and search, you had to leave your borough to go and look at this thing you wanted to find. You know, you wanted to look at graffiti and notice it and understand it and skating and all that type of shit. Now, a kid doesn't have to leave their bedroom to look at and want to be part of.
Absolutely,
There's no finding out or chatting to people. You don't need to.
It's like democratised, isn't it, by the internet? Like,
I think it's really sad though, man, because like you say, the interactions, you were walking around Brentford not talking to many people. You turn up in Waterloo at South Bank and there's thousands literally. It's a constant like meeting loads of different types of people. I don't know, I'm not a kid now. I look at my son though, he's 18, and I do wonder what the fuck goes on, how these choices are made, because you're like, who the fuck are you talking to? Like, where's the socializing?
It's mad, isn't it?
It's nuts. And yet you're into things like, what's the, and so and you wondered, where's the depth? Is there any depth to it? Do you find things out? It's definitely a weird age now. I got a big thing against all that shit.
I'm so glad that I'm not. Like, I'm really glad that we're in. What are we again? We're Generation X, Millennials. Can't remember one of them.
Yeah.
So we're the generation that grew up without mobile phones and without the internet. And so I think there was some. I'm terrible at facts and stats and stuff. But there was some fact that I read, which is like, in a few years' time, or maybe now, that the people who are born now will have always had the internet in their life since they were born. Do you know what I mean? And like, that kind of blew my mind for a bit. I was just like, wow, like,
man, you know. Like, I know you love tech and I know you think it's a great thing. I'm so happy I was born in the 80s.
I was born
New Year's Day 1980 and I experienced all the 80s and the 90s. And I've got, you know, when phones became available on the at street level, not the big bricks, but you know, when the Nokias or the one to ones came out, that was our first experience with mobiles.
Same here.
I'm so glad.
But same here. But and I also feel a little bit like, you know, this is the we were part of the. It's the same with graffiti or maybe not DJing, but like, yeah, it's like you saw the growth of this.
Yeah.
This subculture happen.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel a bit
like very
that
lucky
with technology. 100%,
we're really lucky to have seen what this culture was like before, but before, without even knowing what was going to happen as well.
Yeah. Not,
obviously, you wouldn't know what was going to happen, but it's so mad to think back 15 years or 20 years.
If someone told you that you would have, even if like 20 years ago someone said to you, oh, you'd have a calculator and a compass and, everything in your pocket on your phone, you'd be like, shut up, mate.
And now I've got maps, I've got my emails, I'm never left alone. I've got maybe four types of contact versions for people to get hold of me, WhatsApp, text message, DMs, Twitter.
It's crazy.
I'm so glad I saw what I saw.
The rise of technology.
But, again, the kids that are growing up into it now, I'm sure just as we've seen this like speed of technology, they're going to see exactly the same thing.
Mm.
You know, I remember when my girlfriend came home with her iPhone, and my son must have been about 7. And we were just like blown away with this finger motion shit. And Josh had never seen mobile. He just like, just straight away into
intuitive.
It. Intuitive, just straight away.
Mm.
And he'll probably look back and think, I remember when I saw that first iPhone, and now we just blink and things happen.
I remember buttons.
Yeah, exactly. Buttons. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's a fucking crazy time, man.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting. I mean, you can be terrified by it, but you've also got to embrace it because this shit ain't going away.
I've got a bit of a battle with it at the minute because I wonder how you feel about this, actually. That I'm concerned that our history, the culture's history, graffiti's history, is disappearing on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And so people have said to me, yeah, but it's technology, it's great, we're getting to see all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, but we're seeing it in the palm of our hand.
Mm.
We very rarely go onto our computer screens and look at Instagram.
But we've
got these photos that are going up and stories. I'm worried about people thinking that they've done it and told the story and put the history up and don't feel like they have to do anymore.
Yeah, but they won't though, because they weren't there. You weren't there, man.
No.
But do you know what I mean? Like, it's changing, or it has changed, and we were lucky to have been there when that was actually really happening.
I don't mean the current pieces. I think people putting up their paintings today and now, I think that's a fine thing.
Mm.
I'm concerned about the old school or the people, us putting up our first things and stuff that comes from the 80s and 90s and putting up these stories and these pieces and then feeling that, all right, cool, I've told a bit of my story. Because I personally don't think doing an Instagram post is enough history making, documentation.
Yeah, okay.
And so I worry about the fact that, because people are saying, oh yeah, but it's really convenient and, it's free and it's not costly like a book and da-da, and, technology is great. And I'm like, yeah, but how can that thing the size of my palm be justified, documentation of my culture? I can't seem to get past that at the minute.
I totally
you see what I mean.
I do actually completely understand.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to put my finger on.
It's just different. Like, so I remember when, skate videos, when we used to queue up and couldn't wait for this VHS of the new Blueprint vid to come out, and we'd queue up and we're waiting. And then everyone would buy it, or someone would buy it, and you'd all go around to the house and you'd watch it. And then, it was like, oh, fuck, this is so inspiring. And everyone just wanted to go and skate and stuff. And that's how it was back in the day. Same with,
graph videos, man. Getting a message by Artful Dodger was, oh my God, that got me buzzing. I used to love it.
but then I remember Tony Hawk, the video game came out.
Yeah.
And what that did to the skateboarding scene at the time was pretty mental. Like, everyone was just like, well, this is fantasy, this is nonsense. You can't do 1080s off a pole. Like, this is not reality.
Yeah.
And then the next generation of kids have grown up looking at Tony Hawk video game and thinking that's what they've got to do. And the level just went it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, I remember watching, I can't remember his name, but on the Blueprint video, doing like a 360 flip down a set of stairs at Shell Centre, and everyone being like, fuck, that's incredible. Like, kids now, they eat that for breakfast.
Right. I suppose, there's that. There's the the speed in progress. If we're fed a video every 4 months or a magazine every 4 months when we were younger, our progress levels would have been a bit of an easier slant.
Yeah.
Whereas these kids are saying, because they're getting so much information and they're getting this wild information as well, they're getting better quicker.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, with the amount
like
that's coming
through. The bar is set high, like... And you kind of get that with, you can also compare it to music as well, finding new music. So you used to go to record shops and you used to go and look through records and play records, and you'd have to know what you were kind of looking for and stuff. Whereas now there's so much music and it's so easy to make music and there's so many channels to put it out there and for people to obtain it, that finding records, again, it's like digging. You still have to dig.
I suppose you're right.
Now dig through the shit to find particular thing. It's just changed. It's not, I don't know.
It's
more, isn't it? It's just loads.
The fact you just said digging is, you're right. It's not the same digging, but you're right. It's digging.
Digital digging.
Yeah, digital digging. It is digital digging.
Digging digital.
I don't know. I've got a thing about the preservation of the history of the culture.
Mm.
And so that's my only... my gnarl at technology.
But what is your definition of the history of the culture? Because the definition, well, forgive me for butting in, but like,
no, that's good.
For answering for you, like, your definition of the history of the culture is what you've experienced.
Mm.
Does that apply to the generation before us? Does that apply to the generation after us? I don't know.
Well, I think, I think I'm looking at this as not as a personal thing, as a whole scope of the whole culture.
Yeah.
And I'm getting just as upset. And I'm not hating on the people that are putting these photos up. I'm not hating on them whatsoever. It's very, this part of it's personal, the effect it has on me.
Mm.
But I'm getting just as upset as seeing a 1999 or a 2001 train that's never been seen before go on to Instagram and with a short story about it and its historical nature, or even going back to 86 and seeing something being put up on Instagram with a great story. And they're beautiful photos and they're great stories, but I'm concerned that that cannot be the history. That can't be where we look for our history.
Right.
Because we haven't got anywhere to look at them. We've got Crack and Shine, we've got brilliant what Ode's doing with all these London Handstyle books and London Wildlife, brilliant. And Score, I think Score has done the best thing I've ever seen out of this country with his Black Book Sessions stuff. It's absolutely beautiful. And although it's just about him, not about the culture, it's in a wide way, it's a brilliant documentation of his first few years, and I'm looking forward to seeing more. I think we need more stuff. And I'll tell you what I want to do is, we need more stuff where we can preserve our history better, is what I'm saying. And so what I want to do, if we can't print books, and printing books is too expensive and old, which I don't think it is, but I can get the reason into that. I want to build a website that's private and it's just there for people to, and I want to give out a username and password to anyone who wants to participate, and they then just go on there and they put their stories on and they upload photos, and then we start building this archive, and they upload high-res photos and they scan in Black Books and they write these stories about missions. If you're that way inclined, if you're willing to tell the story, let's do it properly. Yeah. If you're willing to give out the photos, let's do it properly and conserve it properly and then do something with it. Mm. Because I don't see fine artists telling you to go to their Instagram to look at their previous work.
Mm.
Right? And to, oh, this is, you go and ask any art, any profession, they're not going to tell you to go and look on Instagram.
But you then still need someone. You then need a moderator. You need someone to say this is and this isn't.
Well,
part
I think
of the history.
Yeah, but I think if we did it, yeah, we do need a moderator. But I'm sure that's yet to come.
Right.
So those types of levels of placements for people are yet to come, and I suppose there's people already there of a certain age who could be these moderators.
Yeah.
But we haven't got anything in system for them to be moderators of. Right. And so what I want to do is make the thing that gives us that opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. Don't show it off. Don't put it out there. Don't have it as a beautiful, colourful, brilliant website that's all shouting and dancing about it. No, this is literally just a fucking server that's going to hold all this information properly while we decide what we can do with it.
Yeah.
Because our culture has grown with technology, which has been great.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it could be the detriment, because we could lose... In 10 years' time, if we don't address this, who's going to be bothered after they've spent all their time on Instagram?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's the bit I'm worried about.
I completely agree.
It's a big question, though. It's a real big... I know I'm asking a big question. I'm asking a lot of people as well. I'm asking them to really think and care about their culture.
But you're not alone in that.
No,
as well.
Definitely not alone.
And I think we all feel like that.
Yeah.
And we just need to collectively come up with like a solution, or at least, I mean, you know, something's better than nothing, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's a weird culture to come from to do this, because although we all know and love each other within the culture, we've grown up with beefs, we've grown up with rivalries, we've grown up with... And although most of that shit goes as you get older and you don't really care whatever happened in the past, it's a weird thing to ask everyone to come back in together and look back. I think it's fully possible. Yeah. And I've started a couple of conversations with web designers about the possibility of it and how it would work. But then I've got to get the culture on side and get them to fill it up.
Well, I'm sure you will, because I feel like that is the voice of the culture right here. Like, I think that is absolutely. I think everyone's kind of... Yeah. I mean, I think I'm playing devil's advocate because I'm just a bit like...
No, but we need that.
It's massive.
Yeah, and we need devil's advocate though, man, because you need reasoning. Yeah. You can't... Yeah. It's definitely not about me just ranting.
Having sort of related, and I don't want to sign myself up for this, but me and the girls, we go on naughty trips and we go and do our naughty stuff. And I made a website which was literally just like on my servers, like, you know, it was secure and everything. They had a login, and then that's where we shared all our photos.
Amazing.
It was on my server.
Yeah.
And that was the only way that I could get around, because you know, I've got USBs and stuff, which is a real shame. I've got USBs in my trains and all sorts of, like, you know, mischief that I've got up to, that literally they just sit in a drawer.
Yeah.
You know, and like all of us have that. And it's like, where can we put this?
This is the thing, man. I think it's, you know, it's doing this as well. It's having people around here every week and chatting to them. And you just, I know how much I love my culture. I know how much of a geek I am. I know how much I've collected and all that type of shit. And then you're right. You're like, yeah, we've all got these drawers.
Mm.
And it's like, fuck, this is actually gigantic. And not that I never knew that. Of course I knew that. But it's just so massive. And I'm worried about losing grip of it. It's good to hear that there's this server with this stuff on it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this was quite a while ago, but I mean, it's doable.
Yeah, it is.
It's doable. Unfortunately, nowadays, like, it's nothing's untraceable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, nothing's untraceable. And so, at the end of the day, someone, if anything did, you know, if it did get on top in terms of security, like, there would always be one person
there. Yeah, liable.
But, you know, I'm sure there's ways around it.
I'm sure there's ways around it, and I'm sure there's clever solicitors out there and lawyers out there that could, you know. I don't know. I know it's a criminal activity, and there's literally thousands and millions upon photos of, you know, illegal activity. There just must be a way where we can celebrate it.
There is. Let's do it.
Yeah, it's got to be done.
Let's start this.
Yeah, that's what I'm literally... I want to get this done. This is my next big project, is to make sure I do something with this idea.
Yeah. I mean, but this is a fantastic start.
I'm loving doing this.
It's a fantastic start, because it's, you know, the other thing is, it's untraceable, you know. Because, you know, even like with uploading images, so I always scramble all of my images. So I take all the metadata out and everything like that. You know, I'm sure a lot of people don't know how to do that.
I wouldn't have
a clue. So, like, that would have to be built into the system if you're, you know. Whereas this, you know, I could tell you, you know, about the time when it, you know, got raided in the yard and whatever. That could just be hearsay.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. This is just all talk.
Yeah, exactly. may or may not be true.
Exactly, yeah. We never know. Loads of Photoshopping.
Yeah.
Loads and loads. Great at Photoshop. Been brilliant at it for years.
Brilliant.
So how do you feel like with this work, you know, and like working in the industries you work in, do you really like that chance to paint and that chance to DJ? Is that the best thing? Like, I feel, sounds cheesy, but I feel at one, but we do.
Yeah, definitely.
When we get into those.
Yeah, definitely.
Grooves.
I think, you're kind of, oh God, this is going to sound mad cheesy, but like you're sort of documenting a part of your soul. Like when I make a tune,
yeah,
that's a part of my soul.
This is it though, but it's not cheesy, it's fact.
Yeah. And like, and that's what I love about graffiti as well, is the game of whether you're going to flop or not.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
The like, battle with you and the wall. Yeah, you and these tools. Yeah. Like, please,
best idea and I'm going to try and do it. And if it turns out great, then... you know, but yeah. It might not.
I've
and
got that's high what aspirations.
You, yeah, and that's what keeps you keeping on doing it, because yeah. otherwise, because you know, if you're really good every single time or really shit every single time, you just be like, oh, I can't bother this.
Yeah, the levels of it are great. I just, you know, that that being at one, that soul thing. You're right. You know, and this is what I think the point I get about being an adult and being creative, and especially creative for free, not for a job. Just being creative, that's what I mean. Like, because life is fucking hard the older we get. And you're right, the days get shorter. I don't care. They blatantly get shorter.
Absolutely.
It has to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get caught up with everything that real life gives us, you know, how life gets confusing as we get older. And so those moments where, you know, I'm 38 and I'm standing at a wall wherever and painting because I found the time and, you know, I've got 8 hours, I've got a day.
Yeah,
I can smoke, I can paint, you know, I can chill with my mates afterwards. Finding that time is gorgeous. Is that your phone?
My phone's going mental, I don't know why.
So good. You're right, and I fully agree with you. It is that soul thing, because we don't get to touch it much, you know?
Yeah.
Especially, well, definitely when you're working, you don't.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, no matter how close you want to get to it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So have you had a good summer? Did you get to paint much?
Yeah, summer's been good. I mean, it was like the hottest one ever.
Yeah, it was cooler this year.
So it was brilliant. But yeah, I've just been at this agency, so I've kind of just been working. So yeah, found a new fella, Adam. He's lovely. That's like my big news, really.
Nice. That's life, though, isn't it? That's the real life shit. You know, yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying. We've got to contend with it.
That's about it. Just in debt, you know, after my year off trying to be an artist just spending all of the money, being like, oh, it's just money, it'll come and go. And it's like, is outweighing the coming at the moment. Yeah. So like, it's a bit difficult. So it's been all right.
Yeah. But it's no matter what, though, it's all part of you. It's amazing getting older doing this thing, man. Definitely, considering, you know, it was termed the youth culture, and then you find yourself touching 40 and you're like, shit.
But it is the fountain of eternal youth, right?
It really is. Look at Zombie. Zombie hasn't aged. Zombie literally hasn't aged. That is the fountain of youth right there. He's been at this shit 30 years and he still looks like he did when he started. Like,
just maintaining that childish attitude, I think that's what the thing that creativity does.
It's that Peter Pan stuff, isn't it?
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah.
Well, Candy, it's lovely having you over. Candy,
great chat.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Wicked. Well, there you go. Another dope chat in the can. And didn't it sound good, hey? I think I've got this recording thing down now. Really loved having Candy over. Dope chat, really funny. Art threw itself at her and she absorbed it. And the music thing, we didn't get into it much, but I know Candy's played loads of places and also had a pirate radio show. She loves her cultures. Another one flying the art flag, winning battles and making it look fresh. I've already got another one ready for next Friday. It's another banger. So remember, love your city and love your culture. This is F24.